grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Well, hello everybody and welcome to episode 275 of the Dudes and Beer podcast. How are you doing today? Chris Jordan, your host here. Don't forget, Dudes and Beer is now officially brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. If you're a fan of podcasting like me, want to start up a podcast for your friends, family, fun, business, church, school, whatever, stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. They are your source for everything from branding your show to the technology behind running your show to how to record and edit to distribution, monetization. A to Z is what they do. They provide you with one-on-one private consultation. So despite your level of fluency, they have professionals in the realm there to help you out, whether you're starting, whether you've been in the game for a little while. We're there to give you podcast audits, all kinds of stuff. Stop on by podcastcadet.com today. Dudes20 is the code that you want to use to save 20% off your cart. Our guest today, once again, we have the pleasure of having a presidential candidate join us. And for those of you who wonder why we have presidential candidates who are not your mainstream candidates on, it's because whenever you go to the like grocery store, there's more than just Coke and Pepsi on the shelf. It's because whenever you go to the car lot, even if you go to just a Toyota lot, there's more than just a Camry and Corolla available. Why is it in our political system that we believe only red or blue is the answer? There is no purple, there's no yellow, there's no green. It is literally the opposite ends of the polar spectrum. That's all that we respect and listen to. That is utterly wrong, not what America is about, not what we were founded on, not the principles that we were founded on, most definitely. And for those of you who, much like I said, whenever we had local candidate D. Wiggler Barron on, whenever we had Zoltan Istvan on, first transhumanist candidate in America, for those of you who want to poo-poo this idea, you are the problem. Cue the echo effect right there, like sci-fi echo effect. You are the problem. You're the reason nothing is getting done in this country. You are quite literally the reason. So I would like to welcome to our podcast this evening the great and good Casey Wells. He is a 2020 independent write-in candidate for president, and he is out on the road right now. He's in Austin, Texas. You can find everything out at CaseyWellsForPresident.com. Casey, welcome to the show. How are you this evening?
Hey, I'm doing great. I love that intro. Thank you for having me on. It's very, very great pleasure to be with you.
Well, same here. Thank you so much for being on and taking the time to come on and talk to our audience this evening. As I said in the intro, this is one of the things that I probably believe most passionately about on our show, is the fact that we have no choice politically in America, that people like my dad look at me and go, well, waste your vote. And it's like, I haven't wasted a single vote in my life. It's my vote. It's my decision. I don't care what turns out. I'm going to vote my conscience. I think that's a lot of the issue, is that people are stuck in this rut mentally of there are only two choices. Like I said in our pre-conversation,
a lot of thinking of it. It's like a horse race, you know, they're betting on who they think is going to win rather than who they want to win, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, precisely. And like we were saying before the show, like I said in the intro, there's more than just Pepsi and Coke on the shelf, a whole lot more. Yeah. And wouldn't you want more than just the choice between Pepsi and Coke?
Like, I want to give America, I don't know how soon you want to rip into this, what my platform is, but I can tell you, America needs to have a diversity of choice on not just the candidates, but on policy too, on all policy, on all levels, in my opinion. And so the number one thing I'm fighting for is direct democracy. I want to help build a government-based web service that will allow all U.S. citizens to log on, view upcoming government agendas, have the opportunity to give input on those agendas, and then have that input voted up or down. I think the best input would rise to the top And that is what I think we should be structuring public policy around. So I think public policy should be driven by public input, and public servants should serve public interest.
What? And you know, Casey, that is a revolutionary statement that was made in like 1776. So
exactly.
that's pretty impressive of you to carry on that tradition and thought pattern, because it's pretty rare in this day and age.
Well,
and that's just you know, to for we the people, in order to form a more perfect union. And that's just it. Right now, we are far from unified as a country. We are far from unified politically, even within our own parties. I myself am not a party. I don't vote a party. I don't believe in voting a party. I really don't. I believe in the fact that a good mélange of parties and beliefs is what this country is to begin with. It's what we were founded on. And it's what we're supposed to be. Without these choices, we are literally subservient. So to have someone like you out there that is literally saying, like, we need to have a public platform, because, of course, you can go to, like, Senate.gov, folks, and you can see what they're voting on. Like, all the eight, like, you can go and see all the House resolutions. You can do all that stuff. But to actively have somewhere that you could go and say, hey, this is my opinion. This is what needs to be done. Is revolutionary. Yeah. Nobody has really come up with that platform or that thought pattern. So good for you on doing that.
It was given to me by a greater source, so I'm just trying to give it back. But, you know, coming back to what you said, the revolutionary statement made in 1776, you know, the Declaration of Independence, in it states that governments derive their just powers from the consent of the governed. You know,
right.
So they have really no justifiable power without our consent. And all I want to do is help create a service and a way for all U.S. citizens to be able to provide their consent and then obligate elected leaders to serve that again. But so say if we, I know a lot of people, as I'm traveling, one thing I'm hearing quite often is people want our senators and congressmen to have term limits. But we all know they're never going to vote for term limits.
Yeah.
And so, but I want to make this system, you know, let us put term limits on the table and then have every U.S. citizen that's available or wants to cast a vote on that, cast their vote. And if the majority of the people in your district vote for term limits, I want to make this system obligate your representative to have to vote for term limits or else they're kicked out of office.
Oh, you mean like it's supposed to be?
Yeah, right. You know, the House of Representatives is supposed to represent our interests.
That's right.
Not private interest.
That's right. You know, we've had this discussion. Every single political candidate that's ever come on this show, we've had the discussion on the fact that, A, we are not a democracy. We are a republic. Do not.
And, you know, the definition of a republic, is supreme power held by the people.
That's right.
With elected representatives.
That's right.
But first, it's supreme power with the people. So that's what I want to get in order.
Yes.
Put the power to the people first. And then let the representatives vote accordingly.
Yeah, precisely, because we're really this whole thing about America's a democracy, folks. No, democracy is a form of voting. It is not a form of government. Far cry difference. And to give you an example, our form of voting is basically based on ancient Greece, where you've got a representative. He comes to your town. He says, hey, this is what we're going to vote on. Here's two pots. Put your white marble in this one, your black marble in that one. If you vote yes or you vote no. And whichever one had more, that's how he voted. Didn't matter what he believed. If he was literally voting his own way, that's when they did something called cutting your nose off to spite your face. And they literally chopped your nose off and typically like sewed you in a bag and threw you in the river with a wild animal in it because you were a traitor to your people. pretty harsh.
That's pretty wild.
But it's really
certainly holding these people accountable
exactly.
That have corrupted this country to its core.
Yeah, precisely. And it's the fact of we hold the power. If we say vote this way and you vote opposite, you're fired. Who was your runner up? They're in now. That should be the rule. I mean, one of the things I've posed on this program before is if we're going to have term limits, let's make it an 8-year term max. And if you're going to come back and serve again, you got to wait 4 years. And in that 4 years, you got to have a 40-hour-a-week job. I don't care if you're a doctor. I don't care if you're a lawyer. But you got to be out in the workforce, and you got to know what real life is like.
Yeah, you can't hardly represent people very well if you don't understand their struggle.
If you're not one of the people.
And that's why I think I'd be a great candidate, because I would definitely be the poorest president ever elected. And right now I'd be the youngest president ever elected.
Yeah.
In that respect, I'm the exact opposite of our current president. But I have a deep concern and care about the people, the 99%. I want to help uplift people out of poverty, and I want to empower people in the political process. And so, how do we uplift people out of poverty, Bill? My solution to that is to end the Federal Reserve System and have the U.S. Treasury take over their responsibilities. Because right now, as I understand it, all of our income taxes go to pay the Federal Reserve, mm-hmm. the government, of the interest our government supposedly owes them for them being involved in our money supply. None of it goes towards public good. It all goes towards interest payments. And that's just crazy to me that our government isn't even in control of its own money supply. The Federal Reserve is an independent agency
yep.
that's outside of government. There's no congressional oversight. And it makes zero sense to me. It just seems totally predatory and beholden to big banking and big, wealthy investors' interests rather than the American people's interests.
Yeah.
But if we end that, and then we also have the people in control of the government, then the people would also have more say over how money is redistributed. And I think the American public would be willing to help people more than what we have right now.
Sure.
I know a lot of people want to see homelessness dealt with. There's a lot of homelessness. I see a lot of it here in Austin. And there's plenty of money to go around if there were the programs to help them,
Yep.
But anyway, that's my two cents on the monetary system. But I support universal health care and universal basic income and just about anything that helps support the needs of the American people. But the only two things that I'm very eager to do that would be outside of the will of the people, I'd really like to end the Federal Reserve System, and I'd really like to end the war on terror and bring home our troops and focus our military on American problems.
Yeah.
But aside from that, most everything else, I'm going to put it to the people. What do the people want? Do the people want universal health care? Do the people want the end term limits? Do the people support, universal basic income? And I'm a human. I'm going to have votes on that. But I would want my vote to count equally to yours and everybody else's as president.
Yeah.
We all should have an equal vote on any public policy matter, and no matter who you are. And we collectively work out what we want together, And so what are your thoughts on that?
I was going to say, if we can back up 1 second before we crack that nut, let's go a little bit more into your plan for redistribution of wealth, because I found it very interesting. This was something that has not really been posed by anybody necessarily. I love the fact that you're talking about if you're elected, Bernie Sanders will be your vice. That's great. But
right now, my wife is my vice president. Rachel.
Epically awesome. I love it.
Only person I could find that would be willing to sign all my paperwork and give me power of attorney as I'm out here traveling the country. So I can, I got a rubber stamp with her name and she did a video for me and all that. Bernie wasn't available to take my calls, but if I were to win, she says that she would prefer just to be, first lady. So she's going to resign and then
sure.
I'll appoint a vice at that point. And yes,
yeah.
I have been saying Bernie for a long time. If he'd be willing to take the position, we'll see what happens. So I'd have to win the election first.
Well, the two things that I love, because if you go to CaseyWellsForPresident.com, folks, that is up on your screen right now. There's a great Q&A section that really goes into a lot of questions like, should Donald Trump be impeached? And I love your answer. I would rather beat him at the voting booth. I'd rather see what the mm-hmm. Democrat. I'd rather see the Democrats focus on what they can do to help Americans thrive, rather than worry about impeaching him. Absolutely. And that's a lot of what we've held on this show is, hey, how about we focus on some business here and really take care of people? And that's one reason why I want to get into the question that's on your website of, is taxation theft? And your plan for redistribution of wealth via taxes.
Via taxes? I'm not saying do it via taxes.
Well, I mean, the proposed 1% tax, I mean.
Yeah, that's the only tax I support, is the tax on the rich.
Exactly, exactly.
You want me to talk about that a minute?
Oh, yeah, absolutely, because I think that's a very interesting plan. It's something that hadn't really been proposed by anybody yet, and it's something that could really have some value to it if we really start to peel the onion apart and look at it a little bit more critically like this.
Okay. Well, my proposal is that, you know, if we end the Fed, we end income taxes, but I wouldn't want to end income taxes for the rich. I'd just rather end it for the poor. So basically anybody making under $1 million under my proposal is not taxed income taxes. At 1 million, I'm proposing you're taxed at 1%, and that would incrementally increase until you get to like 100 million. At 100 million, I'm suggesting a 50% tax, and anything you make over 100 million is a 50% tax. You make a billion, 50% tax, and then we can use that money to put back into social programs to help uplift people.
Yeah.
But, you know, if we end the Federal Reserve, though, do we even need taxes? If the government was in control of its own money supply, do we even need taxes? Why couldn't the government just issue the money directly to whatever needed funding?
Yeah.
You know, and so I got both of those. But I just, from my research, you know, I've gathered when people get so tremendously wealthy, they often use their wealth to found, you know, philanthropies. And their philanthropies usually give out conditional grants to different organizations, to think tanks and so on. Some of those are geared towards just giving money to think tanks to write up public policy plans that then get spoon-fed to politicians and implemented into law.
Yep.
And that style of philanthropy, I would like to declare treasonous. I don't think anybody should be able to use their great wealth to control and influence public policy for their own private benefit in that way. That is a high crime in my mind. And so any philanthropy that does that kind of activity, they need to be criminally dealt with, in my opinion.
I would tend to agree with that. I'm one of those people that says, let's abolish lobbies.
That's a good one too. That's kind of like they're connected.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Either that, or if we're going to keep the lobbies, let's at least pass something to say that like all the House members and senators have to wear like a NASCAR jacket, you know, like at least show me that you're getting money from DuPont.
Right. Yeah. How much they're taking.
Yeah.
Right.
Same as on a NASCAR thing. Like, if it's a big old Pennzoil jacket, yeah, you may have a few other sponsors, but most of your money's coming from Pennzoil.
Yeah, I'd like to see, you know, publicly funded elections, so, you know, get all that big money out of it.
Yeah.
You know, with these super PACs and Citizens United and so on,
yep,
that can give as much money as they want to a political campaign, that's pretty outrageous. Like,
yeah.
You know,
And once you start getting into the fact of superdelegates, you know, things like that, where one person's vote counts for like 40 or more, depending on the size of the area.
This year that the DNC and the RNC are private corporations.
Yeah.
And they have.
Yep.
I didn't realize that before until I started running for president. And they have no obligation to follow their own rules or give the public a fair election.
No, like none
they
whatsoever.
Choose whoever they want when it comes down to it.
Yeah, that's exactly why there was no criminal charges filed against Debbie Wasserman Schultz after she literally rigged the Democratic primary.
That's crazy.
It was there. They had a court case. And it was like, yep, it happened. But unfortunately, it's not really that illegal, and like we can have her released from her position there, because like she was released from her position before the election, and then she was there on election night commenting on it,
wow.
like as a Fox News correspondent.
Story, wow.
It was like, whoa, what the Shasta? They straight up rigged their own primary, and they have no criminal charges for that. What is that about? Because yeah, nice. it is utterly a private system. But I remember my first election that I could vote in, I voted for Ralph Nader. And I specifically remember the stories and the videos of him trying to get into the stage to debate and security holding him back and keeping him from going up on stage to debate. Because he was not invited to the debate. And it's like, but I have a third of the popular vote. Sorry, you're not invited to debate.
Yeah,
which is just crazy to me.
I just don't understand how people can trust a system like that any longer. Like, did you know that 42% of Americans now identify themselves as independent?
I would hope so.
Yeah, it's like 20-some percent are Republican, 20-some-odd percent are Democrat.
Good.
But 42% are independent. But we're always made to believe, like, it's just nothing but red states and blue states.
Yeah.
But that's not even true. It's
yep.
not true at all. They don't want to paint the picture of how many gray states there really are out there.
Yeah.
People that are independent, you know. So that's what I'm here to do, is just to give those people that are independent a candidate they can, you know, believe in.
Yeah, precisely. And I mean, even just going through, like I said, the questions that are here on your website, feel free to stop on by and visit, folks. KelseyWellsForPresident.com is the website. There are some great stuff in here, like the question number 12, are you going to criminalize philanthropies that give conditional grants? Like, we were just talking about that. It's amazing to see how many people are entrenched in this system, how many people have become professional politicians when that was never the intent of the position. You were supposed to be a community mover and shaker, somebody who had the finger on the pulse of your community, whether it be a doctor, lawyer, things like that. And you were supposed to go serve at the gratitude of your constituents. Benjamin Franklin even proposed the fact that representatives should only be reimbursed for expenses. Because you got a job, you're a landowner, like you're a business mm-hmm. owner, you're a person of industry. It's not like you're broke.
Yeah.
And we've gotten to this point now where, like you're saying, representatives are paid out of a federal coffer. They are no longer paid by their state constituents, which means they are no longer beholden to what we say. That's just not right. It is literally not constitutionally correct. I remember there was two whole wars here in America fought over no taxation without representation. People normally forget that second one, which was the Whiskey Rebellion, which basically happened shortly after the American Revolution, where it was, hey, how are we going to pay back these debts to France and everything else? Well, we need to tax people. What are we going to tax? Well, let's tax spirits, because we can't tax beer. Everybody drinks beer, but you got to have a certain water to make spirits. So, and suddenly all these people in other states where they were making whiskey and stuff had no representation, and they were being taxed more than everyone else. So it was quite literally our first civil war right after the American Revolution over the exact same thing. Mm. And here we are up against it again.
I want to bring
go ahead.
A local level too. Like, can I tell you a story about where I'm from?
Oh, please.
Okay. All right. I'm from a small town in Illinois called Lexington. And years ago, we had a mayor that was part of a local economic development council. And I went to City Hall. At that time, I was proposing this idea of this community garden. But then the city clerk told me, well, you know, if you really want a community garden in your town, you better go down to the local economic development council and ask them if they support that idea first. Because if they support it, then our mayor will support it. And I'm like, what the heck is this about? You know, why do I got to go? So then I got super curious about the Economic Development Council, and I filled out stacks and stacks of FOIA requests to learn about them and my mayor's connection to them. And during that time, the mayor was constantly proposing these redevelopment projects. And I, also at the time, I was going through years worth of our annual city spending. And year by year, as our mayor got affiliated with this group, every year, more and more of our annual city spending was going towards corporations that were invested in that local economic development council. One project that came through, the owner of the Blackhawks, Rocky Wirtz, he had a beverage distribution company called Wirtz Beverage, and they put in a Wirtz distribution center right outside of our small town. And it was under the guise that, you know, oh, this is going to bring a lot of jobs to our town, you know. But not one person, except for a security guard from Lexington, was ever hired to work there. It was all people brought in from their other distribution center in Peoria were brought over, and they got the jobs, and they had to commute. But my point is, with the dealings between Rocky and our mayor, the mayor gave that distribution center a 20-year tax abatement, and they were inside this thing they call TIF district. And so whenever a TIF district is established, all the increased redevelopment projects that go on and all the increased valuation that comes from those redevelopment projects in that area of land, all the extra tax money goes straight to the city. So before Wirtz got there, that was just farmland. And for the next 20 years, the schools, the fire departments, the roads, you know, all the other taxing bodies in our community, all of them for the next 20 years are seeing that money from that land as if it were still farmland, not an $8 million building. And so that increased taxes, like $40,000 or more, increased tax valuation goes to the city. And the city uses that money to spend at their discretion. And 9 times out of 10, you know, the corporations that get the money for those redevelopment projects associated with the TIF district are those that are invested in the local economic development council.
Yeah.
But I'll wrap it up here in a second. Let me just tell you one step further. So I went down to that local economic development council, and I asked their CEO where he gets his stomping orders. And he told me they take it from the International Economic Development Council. He also told me that all the other economic development councils in Illinois are very well connected. But then I went and researched the International Economic Development Council, and I found that over 4,500 economic development councils fall under their umbrella. And then I found that the Rockefeller Brothers Fund funds the International Economic Development Council in some of their initiatives. Also, in the IEDC Board Member Handbook, it says that this organization will determine who wins and loses in the international marketplace. It also says in there that any member of this organization has a duty of loyalty, duty of care to this organization over any other in their personal or professional life. At my local Economic Development Council, I couldn't get that CEO to give me their board member handbook because he says we're a private organization, although 10 or more of the members of their board members are public officials and they take public money. They're a private organization, and you wouldn't share any detail with me about their goings-on there. But I can only assume that if they're taking their stopping orders from the International Economic Development Council, and the International Economic Development Council makes all their board members have this level of duty of loyalty, duty of care, I only assume that, you know, all mayors and all other people that are part of the Economic Development Councils have that same sort of loyalty to it, which would explain why every year, more and more of our annual city spending was going towards those kind of corporations. And they get the tax breaks and the tax incentives, and it just funnels money back into the hands of internationalists. But getting back to my main point of why I even told this story is if the people of my town had a choice on how that real estate tax money was spent, I have a feeling they would prefer it to go towards the schools, towards the libraries, towards the fire departments. They would like to invest into small local business rather than just throwing money at these big box chain organizations out by the interstate to get all the tax breaks and all the help while the mom and pop shops got to fight to get any help whatsoever, you know? And so I just want to put the power to the people on a local, state, and federal level. And I believe On a local level, locals know what's best for their community, and we need to stop allowing these outside economic developers to come in to dictate how, you know, the next 20 years, how our communities are going to be developed, because it only goes to serve their own greedy interests, and it's not really in our own best interest.
Yeah, precisely. And not many people know this about the economic development centers. I'm so glad that you brought that up, because not many people realize like what it means to have a UN sister city, things like that. And once you're like a UN sister city, that's kind of where that trail begins.
UN, do you know who founded the UN? I know John D. Rockefeller Jr. paid for the land and the building for the establishment of the UN in New York.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Family Philanthropies continue to give conditional grants to the UN to this day that control their future development.
Yes. Yes, precisely. And that's one of the things that I love about your platform, is that you are all about separating that. You are all about getting those private organizations out of government. You are all about, like you're saying, returning literally the power of decision in our country to the people, to literally keep this from happening again. One of the big things that we play regularly here on our show is, of course, the retirement speech of Dwight D. Eisenhower. There's always the part, you know, that everybody plays ad nauseum, but where the industrial military complex. But what they forget is that part just before it, where you can literally hear the desperation in the man's voice and saying, like, we had to go through extreme measures to win this war. We had to get rid of some constitutional things and allow things to happen just so that this victory could happen. Take them back. Please don't let this continue. Please take your power back. And just so you know, folks, don't forget, General Dwight D. Eisenhower. The man took an oath to defend the Constitution before he was ever a president or politician, as a soldier. And to know that he said that, as a soldier, as a general, to say, we have allowed corporations to come into our country. We have nuzzled them close to the breast of our military, and this is dangerous. This will lead to a revocation of your rights. This will lead to horrible things if you do not stop it. And lo and behold, we're against that.
The biggest military contractors out there are all corporate members of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Yep.
And the Council on Foreign Relations is largely driven by Rockefeller Family Philanthropies. David Rockefeller was honorary chairman of it for many, many years, up until his death in 2017.
Yeah.
And so any foreign policy initiative coming from them is just geared to serve their collective investment group. And it's not for the best interest of the United States.
Well, and absolutely, it's not in the best interest of the United States. It's in the best interest of something else.
money. Yeah, military contractors, big money.
Yeah, precisely. And, I'm so glad that you brought up the Council on Foreign Relations. It's almost like, and we didn't, folks, it's almost like we, like, sent each other a script today. Or like you're inside of my head, which is creepy enough in there. but... That is literally one of the questions that I loved on your website, is what are we going to do about the Council on Foreign Relations? Will you allow anybody in the Council on Foreign Relations to hold public office? Things like that. So let's kind of start addressing that a little bit, if you don't mind.
Not in my cabinet. I promise you.
Yeah.
There will not be a single member of the Council on Foreign Relations in my cabinet if I were elected president of this country. They are one of the most treasonous organizations I've ever come across. And, it breaks my heart. Like, I can tell you, the Clinton administration, the Bush administration, the Obama administration, even the Trump administration, and the members in the Trump administration are barely deeper, but they're a little deeper. But in the three previous administrations, like the Secretaries of State, Secretaries of the Treasury, Secretaries of Defense, Secretaries of Commerce, all the head main positions right after, or all those elected leaders were a part of the Council on Foreign Relations while they were in public office. And I'd assume they have a duty of loyalty to them, you know, and which is, and it's like a big version of all these little economic development councils that go on over the country. Mm-hmm. It's like the federal version of an economic development council, basically.
Yeah.
It's like where they form these public-private partnerships and invite elected leaders to come in and be a part of their organizations. And Hillary Clinton, I never saw her name on a membership list, but I did see her, so her husband is, and her daughter is also on the Council on Foreign Relations. But I've seen an interview with her where she's at the Council on Foreign Relations, and she's given a speech. In the opening of it, she thanks them for her having her there and so on, and says, you know, it's great to be here so we can hear from the council how we should be thinking about the future and, you know, what we should be doing next. And she just openly says this is basically where we're taking our stopping orders from. And so that I don't trust a private organization dictating public policy. I trust the American people.
Yes.
You know, 95% of the people I'm meeting out here are just kind-hearted, concerned, hardworking Americans that want a voice. And I believe if they were empowered, we'd be making much better decisions collectively.
I tend to agree with you on that point. And, I really love the honesty with which you speak, Casey. There's really been no punches held back in these answers. So thank you so much. So often whenever I interview people, there are some curated answers that they have, things like that. But, you know, with somebody as honest as you are, about what they believe, about what their stance is, what do you think could, 'cause like myself, I'm one of those people that says, hey, with all the cryptography we have now, all of the means by which that we can do encrypted things, you know, what about being able to vote on this kind of stuff regularly, like you're saying, through a website, something along those lines. I mean, what kind of system would you try to put into place to allow, I mean, aside from the website, of course, how would you try to open up the dialogue between representatives and their constituents?
From, like, congressmen to the people?
Yeah, congressmen to the people, president to the people, things like that. Because, I mean, I am not a fan of our current dude in charge, but the one thing I've told people for the last 4 years is, my God, man, at least Twitter is like an unabashed, you know, like, just channel into that dude's head. And what he actively thinks, you know, like since when, like maybe during the fireside chats, we had some honesty like that. But since then, it's all been curated message. It's all been written by speech drafters, things like that. To have this unabridged connection to the literal thoughts daily of the president like that is unheard of in the history of America. So, like, you got to kind of appreciate that, despite the train wreck of a human being that things are up there right now. But what would you do to try and build that bridge, to try and rebuild that bridge of trust? Because I think a lot of people really look to our president as some sort of elucidated savior that actively has some power. When he really doesn't, he has like the power of veto and the power to like throw some baller parties without permission. Aside from that, he literally has no permission to do anything without Congress and the House saying so. There's only 10, only 10 things in the like constitutional job title of president. So what would you do to start rebuilding that barrier of trust with the American
people? You got me thinking now. I never thought about doing some fireside chats. Maybe I'll bring that back. But I got plenty of ideas that I'd like to propose, but all of my ideas outside the ones that I already mentioned are just proposals, you know. And so I'll pitch the ideas to the American people and then see what the feedback is, and then also allow the American people to pitch ideas as well. And I think we got to sort out these things together as a whole. I never want to be an authoritarian kind of leader. You know, I want to be a leader that works with people, that listens, and that cares about the collective. And so, you know, I don't know. One of my least favorite topics to talk about, and people ask me sometimes, is what my stance is on abortion. That's just a heartbreaking topic. But
it is.
Honestly, let's say 50% of the people believe it's murder at inception, and if 50% of the people believe it's murder, like, at birth, then in direct democracy system, I would hope we could come together to agree, okay, we're going to say it's murder 4.5 months, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's like situations like that where there's polar opposites of thinking. We got to work together and listen to one another to come to terms and balance things out statistically of where our will is.
Yeah, and, you know, one of the big missions of Dudes and Beer is conversation. Conversation on hard and awkward topics. Because, you know, this country was founded on people sitting in a bar making a decision to do something, literally making a decision to do something treasonous to the crown and risk dying to do it. And not many people realize the staggering statistic that less than 20% of the American public took part actively in the American Revolution. Less than 20%. That's what it took to take on England and beat them. So if you think it's an insurmountable odd, people, that we can come together and make a decision, it is not. It's not. We don't have to go to war. We don't have to have a civil war. What we have to have is open conversation and the willingness to have it.
Amen to that.
And having someone like you that's literally saying, listen, I understand this is a hard topic. This is a passionate topic. This is something that is a topic of belief, a topic of faith for some people, a topic of something else personal for other people. But we have to look at this dispassionately. We have to look at this statistically, and we have to, despite what anybody's beliefs are, follow the will of the people.
Amen. That's it. That's exactly it.
And
you want to be in my cabinet if I win this thing? I like your style.
Damn,
I like,
right,
your
man.
Vibe.
I'll be your minister of communications.
Hey, all right, you're in. If I win, you're in.
I'll make sure all your tech is great. That's what I do for a living. you're going to have the most baller events ever.
God bless.
But quite literally,
we got a long road.
We've got a long road ahead as America, period. Not even to November, my friend.
Yeah.
But with everything that's going on in our country and in our country's soul and heart right now, we have a long, long way. We have a long road of healing in front of all of us. All of us.
True.
And it's so hard for everybody to admit their part. For everybody, like right now, the big question is defunding police across America. And for me, you know, the conversation I've had in my Dudes and Beer group, because that's what we do. We post articles. We open conversations. No name calling, nothing like that. Open conversations. Let's get to the root of it, folks. And, you know, I was having the conversation with somebody earlier today, just the fact of, okay, but what if we defund police? How are we going to deal with these other situations? You know, like we need to have some kind of reform. But do we want to go back to the situation of the old West?
Hold them accountable.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I would suggest.
Yeah.
And charge them with the same penalties as a civilian if they're using lethal force in a non-lethal situation.
That's right. And that's just it. It's one of those union be damned. somebody died, until we figure it out, you're in detention. Same way as any normal citizen.
Yeah.
If somebody died and I was right there, I would be detained by the police for questioning. Until I could post bail, or I got a lawyer, you know. But that's what needs to happen. We need to start holding people accountable, and to know that there's someone like you out there that is bringing this point of conscience back to our government, trying to bring a point of conscience back to decision, instead of, like we were saying at the beginning, infrared, ultraviolet, the extremes of the decision, instead of the entire panoply of rainbow and frequencies in between. We need to remember that all these frequencies together make the light that we see, that is white light. Without one of them, you will literally not be able to see the same way, people.
Beautiful.
Like, that's just science.
I love that analogy.
That's science. Without one of these color spectrums, you will not be able to see the world the same way. And I personally believe it's the same way in politics, that without that choice, without the choice of independent, without the choice of Green Party, without the, screw it, man, without the choice of communism, I don't care. I don't care.
Yeah, we need the whole spectrum.
You do. You do. It's the only way that you can have an educated decision. Aside from that, you are literally making the most uneducated decision you can make. You've got like the choice of four people per party. That's it. But you're still stuck with those two parties.
And as if we can trust them to make decisions on our behalf any longer.
Well, or that we could trust them to make the decision that we want them to make during the primary. Because like we said, they're a private organization. They can do whatever the hell they want. We could say we reject it altogether. Exactly.
If I can get the 42% to come out, or the 30% that didn't even vote to stand behind me and spread word of mouth, oh man, there's just amazing things I believe we could do.
Brother, if we could wake up 25% of that 40% to any means, to any means, be it independent or not, to any means, it would be a beautiful thing. And
it would,
right now, like I was saying, we are up against so many different issues in this country. So much healing has to be done as a society. So much healing has to be done as people, as individuals. And we really do have to start focusing more on our impact, on our accountability, and holding people accountable and responsible when they are not doing what we have hired them to do. Literally. You didn't just vote them into office. You're paying them money. If you were a boss, or if you've had a boss that literally told you more than once, you're not doing your job, you're fired. Welcome to politics and how it should be.
That's right. That's what we're going to bring. If God allows us and the American people give me the opportunity.
Yeah.
That's what we're going to be doing.
And, you know, one of my biggest things is the fact that even if somebody is fired from their job, they can still receive their pension. Like, these dudes get paid for life.
I know a lot of people are upset about that, too. My aunt is pretty mad about that.
Our
men and women, you know, of honor in the military get, what, half of their...
Yep.
Yeah, they don't get the full pension.
Hey, there's places like here in Texas where Texas teachers don't get both. You get one or the other. You don't get both. And they paid their taxes into
it. They're not able to vote that for themselves.
Yeah.
Or something.
Yeah.
You know?
It's horrifying. It's horrifying. And to know that these people, the people that, like you're saying, soldiers, I'm going to say it, folks, police officers, first responders, nurses. These are some of the lowest paid jobs on the totem pole, yet still the people that we depend on to teachers, to educate our children, to protect us, to literally pull us out of a fire and save our life. Why are we paying them less than a congressman?
Yeah.
Why? That makes zero sense to me.
I'm with you on that.
And, you know, it just to know that there are candidates like you out there that are so passionate about this and so passionate about waking people up. Just wake them up. Like I said, I would love for you to win. I would love beyond all get out for an independent to win. The one thing that broke my heart more than anything. And you can go back, folks, and listen to episodes of Dudes and Beer for the last many years, since before the last election. I was heartbroken for the fact that Bernie Sanders turned in his I for a D.
Yeah, I never quite understood that one either.
Well, it's literally because what are you going to do? Win as an independent? You got to join a party, right? And then they basically brought him into the Democratic Party, called him out, and took his votes.
If he would have stayed independent as a write-in candidate in the last election, I would have wrote him in.
Well, I think, quite honestly, with everything that was going on, and like I said, people can go through and listen, I have held this entire time, we could have very well had our first independent president. We really could have, with everything that was going on during the last election between Trump, Hillary, all that, had he just stuck it out, I really think that we could have had our first independent president and really shaken up the system.
I agree with you. That's a lot of the reason why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
Is my disappointment that he didn't do it, but I can't put it on him to be the change I want to see.
No.
If I got it on my heart, I got to be it.
And that's just it, folks. That is why I have independent presidential candidates on this show. Like I said at the preamble of this show, if you think it's only red or blue, you're the problem. You're the active problem with our system right now. And I'm talking to you, my family members. I love y'all. I'm going to see some of y'all this weekend. But you're the problem. I've told it to you at the family reunion. We still talk, and I love you. But you're the problem. You vote a straight ticket, and you don't give a damn what the hell people think. You literally go in, you vote everything blue, despite what it is, or despite what they think or believe. And then you wonder why we have the problems. This is why we have the problems. Stop it, people. Vote your conscience, vote your heart, educate yourselves in something different. Learn that there is more than one choice.
And take the time to look me up. Casey Wells, K-A-S-E-Y.
That's right.
W-E-L-L-S.
ForPresident.com is the website. Casey Wells, ForPresident.com. Casey, thank you so much for taking the time this week. Before we let you go, I actively want to talk about American Standard. You gotta let us know a little bit about American Standard. One of my favorite things about Casey, folks, is Casey is an active artist. And his I was a little upset because whenever we started this interview, you were on video and it was like, oh man, he's got Standard in the background.
yep, we had it all set up.
But that's why I wanted to, like, I'm showing Standard on screen right now. This is as of right now, his traveling companion around the country, folks. What was it that inspired you to create American Standard?
Okay. Well, when I left Illinois State University in 2009, from 2009 through 2012, I was doing very deep research. I kind of became a hermit at that time. I got rid of my cell phone, my bank account, all forms of social media, email, and so on. And I just used my computer for those years to do deep research into the origins of power. And I wanted to understand the funding sources of some of the biggest organizations in the world. And I was looking at the Federal Reserve, the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the United Nations, and so on, World Health Organization. And every single time I was looking at the funding sources and the foundations of those major organizations, one name kept popping up. And that name was Rockefeller.
Yep.
And then that got me hyper-focused on the Rockefellers and their family philanthropies. And that all began back with John D. and Standard Oil. I think he founded Standard Oil in 1870. And so He later became the richest man of the last century. And I had a friend of mine. I also scrap metals for a living and to get by back home as well as being an artist. And I had this guy that gives me metal from time to time, and he told me to come out to this farm and get this old fuel tank. And so he forklifted this thing onto my trailer, and I brought it home, and then I saw the Standard Oil symbol on it. And I was holding my fingers up like a crucifix at it at first, like, oh, my God, I can't hold on to this thing. I need to junk this. But then I was thinking about all that research that I had done about Standard Oil and all their subsidiaries, like some of them you might know of today, are like BP, Shell, Chevron, ExxonMobil, ConocoPhillips, Sunoco, Esso, you know, Texaco, Gulf, so on, Sinclair, many.
Yeah, like 90% of them.
yeah, that, it gives a false sense of, well, John D. was ordered to split up Standard Oil into 34 different companies, but then he owned a quarter of the shares in all of them. Those share values rose, and he emerged, it tripled his wealth, and emerged the richest man of the last century. It actually helped him.
Yeah, the only dude to ever come out on top from monopoly busting.
Yeah, right. Yeah, a lot of people think that, oh, Standard was dissolved, and they took that away from him. No, they didn't take it away from him. You know, it helped him.
Oh, he
created a
actively
false sense of diversity in the marketplace. But really, it's all coming from the same refineries, enriching the same family, and so on. And so, on one side of the elephant, I have all the subsidiaries of Standard Oil that I'm aware of. On the butt of the elephant, by the reset button, I have many of the Rockefeller family philanthropies that were born out of the great wealth they accumulated through Standard Oil and their subsidiaries.
Yep.
And then on the other side of the elephant are many of the organizations that I already previously mentioned that they give conditional grants to that control public policy for their own private benefit for about 100 years now. And so, and then on the right ear of the elephant are things I want to fight against. The other ear is things I want to fight for. But it's all about this duality and the but you know, that's basically the story in a nutshell of American Standard. But to tell you one other thing, though, I have to give credit to my friend Kyle Riley, Arts and Crafts. He came to my home one weekend, and that fuel tank was sitting in my driveway, and I asked him what he wanted to do that weekend. Do you want to do some graffiti under the overpass? Do you want to go canoeing, or do you want to make an elephant? And he chose make an elephant, and so he came down and spent about 16 days with me, 16-hour days. We worked hard and long on that. He supplied all the paints that are painted all over the elephant. I came back, he painted the lines and the patterns and helped me sculpt it a bit, too. And I supplied all the metals, and we kind of sculpted it together. Then I came back in and painted the words in as well. And so I think that's the whole story of American Standard in a nutshell.
And it is a beautiful, beautiful work of art. It is a statement. It is a statement. There is a reason right now why you are touring America with your campaign with it. It is literally your campaign in a piece of art. It is one of the most beautiful things I've seen.
All my policies are written all over it. Everything I want to fight against for, everything is on there. I'm hoping to park it on the White House lawn so people can come up and hold me to it. Like, be, hey, Casey, you mentioned this right here in the open. Why aren't we working on that? And I'll be like, oh, yeah, let's get on that. All right.
Yeah,
and it's
precisely.
It's been just an amazing good luck charm, too. Like, I left home with $500 in a dream. Like, I had enough money to get through Michigan and maybe Ohio. But here I am still going. I still got $500 from the small donations I've been getting along the way from people. I went to Michigan, Ohio, then Tennessee and Kentucky and Virginia, North Carolina. In North Carolina, I had to get 500 signatures, and I met a girl that was going to help me get signatures at her job, and then she took me there, and her bosses told me to get lost, and cause she worked at a restaurant, and then she says, okay, well, if he has to go, I'm going too, and she quit her job and has become my campaign manager and been with me ever since.
Wow.
And she helped me get like 545 signatures there. Wow. And then we went to Georgia after that, and we met another guy that was working construction, and my campaign manager's like, hey, why don't you just quit your job and join us? 2 days later, he called me, quit his job too, and he's the one that connected me with you today.
Oh, fantastic.
And he's doing my media outreach for me now as we go from town to town.
Fantastic.
So we've caught our peace train now, and now we're still rolling. We're going to keep going. We got 18 more states to get to, and so we got hopes of getting to California and back. But you know, without that elephant, I don't think I'd still be out here. That just brings people in so much everywhere we go. Anytime we stop at a gas station,
yeah,
we're there for about a half hour to an hour because people are approaching us and talking. It's just an amazing blessing, and it keeps the blessings coming and the conversation coming, because then we're not having to force ourselves on anyone, you
that's
know,
right.
Force the conversation. It's just when they come, that thing, the American Standard just disarms people and engages people, and it's just been wonderful, you know, seeing the public reaction to it
out
here.
And that's so beautiful, man, to know that, like you're saying, you no longer have to force your message on people, you know, because that can really be a little bit uncomfortable sometimes whenever you're trying to go out and raise awareness and things like that, just to be grabbing people off the street and, hey, what's going on? Nice to meet you. Casey Wells.
Yeah.
Presidential candidate.
Yeah.
By the way,
in the Fed, let's in the Fed, you know, and all those other things that are hard to hear. You know, a lot of people don't want to talk about the Council on Foreign Relations
you
or the Trilateral
to.
Commission or the Bilderberg and all that stuff. But
yep.
When it's written on the elephant and you point to it, a light is clicking on at people's heads and they don't feel so pushed off by it. They're like, oh, yeah, yeah. And yeah. Like, to see the elephant and point to it as I'm discussing the politics, it's amazing. If I didn't have it, I would feel like I would feel lost. Like it'd be very difficult for me to cold turkey with people, just, you know, without it. It's a great piece.
Well,
huge blessing.
That's great. Like I said, I could not let the interview go and end without talking about American Standard. It's such a beautiful message, such a beautiful piece of art. Thank you so much for bringing it to Austin. Thank you so much for bringing your message to Austin and to Texas and to the world on this podcast. Thank you so much for coming and talking to our audience today, and really educating them on some things. It's great to know that there is a presidential candidate out there that's not just independent like Dee Wiggler Barron, not a transhumanist like Zoltan Istvan, but is out there talking about Council on Foreign Relations, Trilateral Commission, Bilderberg Group, things like that, that members of our government are fully involved in, that go fully against regulations in our country that are supposed to keep politicians from doing such things. So thank you so much for taking the time to come on to share your message.
God bless you, Christopher. I've really enjoyed our time together. Thank you for helping me spread the word. I really, really do appreciate you.
Absolutely. One last time, tell everybody where they can go online to find your message, to find out more about American Standard, and when you two good folks will be coming to a town near them so that they can come sign your petition.
Oh, well, we're just floating in the breeze right now. I can't really tell you when we're going to be anywhere because we just take it as it comes.
Okay.
But I can tell you, you can find me at CaseyWellsForPresident.com. That's CaseyWellsForPresident.com. You can also friend me on Facebook. Search Casey Wells for President, and you should be able to find me pretty easily on there. Also on Instagram, you can do the same there. On Twitter, my handle is at Wright. Wright is all lowercase letters, W-R-I-T-E, uppercase letters, Casey Wells. So at Wright Casey Wells on Twitter. I'm on YouTube, too. If you search Casey Wells, see some of my videos. And so, but CaseyWellsForPresident.com has the majority of my policy plans and proposals. If you want to check into those, and
absolutely,
feel free to reach out to me on any of those platforms. I'd love to engage, and I'm pretty receptive about when people respond. I get back to people most of the time on what your input is. So
yeah. And, you know, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, and if you like anything that I'm doing, y'all, if you don't mind helping me spread the word, like and share and let your friends and family know who I am. Really, word of mouth is how this campaign is going to get out there. Because I don't think they're going to put me on mainstream media, because three of the big six major media corporations are headquartered in the Rockefeller Center. And,
that's right.
You know, they control a lot of that, and I don't expect them to put me there. But if they do, I'll try to You'll probably see me changing my wording to say special interest and so on rather than the name Rockefeller because I got to cater it to the situation.
That's but, right. That's you right. You got to play the political game sometimes, bud.
but and, here I could say Rockefeller, I feel. You know, that's what it's really about. And philanthropies like them, there's many others that have modeled their style of philanthropy from what they do. But
yeah,
those, I got a problem with those guys, too.
Well, once again, thank you so much for coming on for honest answers to hard questions. Like I said, so hard to find that in a politician these days, to know that there is a normal guy like you out there talking about this, trying to do this, trying to make a difference. Go out. Stop on by CaseyWellsForPresident.com, folks. Check him out. See if he's the candidate for you. Sign his petition if he is in your local area. Stop on by. Check out American Standard, the beautiful piece of art that he has made that is literally an artistic representation of his campaign and his beliefs. So once again, Casey, thank you so much for taking the time. Please do hold the line while we close things out. While you're online checking everything with Casey Wells, folks, make sure to stop on by dudesandbeer.com. That is where you can find all the episodes. Make sure to stop on by the Knowledge Vault. That's where you can find things like documents on the Council of Foreign Relations. It's all there in the declassified section, folks. There's like notes from the Bilderberg Group for about 10 years of notes there. All kinds of fun stuff on the Trilateral Commission, things like that. So stop on by the Knowledge Vault. dudesandbeer.com/knowledge is where you can find that. We'll be having some great documents coming up for our upcoming episode with Mike Turber about warp drive engines, things like that. Actual patents, people, actual patents, not even joking. These things are going to be dropped. So some great knowledge bombs coming to you there on the Knowledge Vault. While you're online, check out HTUniversalNetwork.com as well as our sponsors. PodcastCadet.com. Dudes20 is the code that you want to use. HD Universal Network has tons of shows like this, other great shows. Until next time, everybody, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, if you can't be good at it. We'll talk to you soon. CaseyWellsForPresident.com.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Dudes and Beer Podcast. To listen to our audio streams or chat with us live, download the official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit HCUniversalNetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody, and until next time, drink responsibly.